Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Peter. On this week's show, we'll be talking with Eve Anderson, who is the Manager of Accessibility Engineering at Google.
We'll be talking with her about Google's efforts to make their products more accessible. She'll describe how Google has responded to the concerns of both advocacy groups and individual users and has fully integrated awareness of accessibility into Google's product development process. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is, even if something had poor accessibility before, give it another try because things may have improved. And here's Eve Anderson describing one such situation.
My tip is to give Google Docs a try. That's the document system that we have for composing and sharing documents. And the reason I think it's a really interesting product is the collaboration features. So you can be working on writing a document, and at the same time, one of your colleagues can be editing a different paragraph or even the same paragraph and creating a document that you don't have to pass back and forth and get confused about which revision is the latest, etc., because it's always up to date. We have launched new accessibility features for some of the collaboration features of Google Docs. For example, if somebody is editing the same paragraph as you are, then it will give you an audio alert that somebody is editing your paragraph so you won't run over each other when making changes. And we also have made a way for you to go in and listen to past revisions of the document so that if your colleague did mess it up, then you can easily revert to an old version of your document.
So this is just one example of how Google has addressed access issues people had with one of their products. In the rest of this show, we'll be talking about Google's view of accessibility in general and how they've integrated accessibility concerns throughout the organization.
Let's start by meeting Eve Anderson and learning a bit about Google.
Hi, my name is Eve Anderson. I manage accessibility engineering at Google.
Many of our listeners and prior guests have had visual impairments. Do you?
I don't, though many of the colleagues that I work with very closely do.
And then how did you get into accessibility?
It was because of a friend of mine at Google. He is completely blind, and he and I became friends through a mutual love of mathematics, in fact, and stayed in touch over the years. And then when there was a need on the accessibility engineering team for somebody with my skill set to come in, I jumped on the opportunity. It was a really exciting opportunity for me to be able to do something that I feel like improves the world, improves people's lives. And so when the opening came about, it was a no-brainer for me to take it.
Now, you probably think you know what Google does, and you might be right, but a simple Google search of Google products reveals not only their ubiquitous search tool, but Google Maps, Google Earth, Google Mail, the Android, the Chrome browser, Google Wallet, Picasa, and on and on and on.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is how Google handles accessibility and builds it into their products.
So let's talk a little bit more specifically then about what is Google's mission in accessibility?
Well, Google's overall mission has been, since the founding of the company, to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful. And accessibility is a really important part of that. By universally accessible, what we mean is that everybody should have access to this information. It doesn't matter what your socioeconomic status is or what country you're in or what abilities or disabilities you have. It's really important for us as an organization to let everybody have equal opportunities with respect to education and information and learning and communication. And so accessibility plays right into that.
How many people work on accessibility across Google?
There are many people across all of Google who are working on accessibility. So we have this core accessibility engineering team with people who are engineers, user experience researchers, technical program managers, and test engineers. And we work with people all over the entire company who are embedded within their product teams working on accessibility. So even if I wanted to give you an exact count of how many people work on it, I don't have a number because so many people at Google have been trained on accessibility and have implemented it, and it's part of their jobs now, either all of their job or a portion thereof. And so because of that, we can't give any exact counts. I can just say it's a lot.
As you mentioned, you're the accessibility manager of the team at Google, and Google covers a wide range of products and services and resources. And it sounds like a lot of these people are distributed. Can you talk a little bit about how you interface with these various groups? How do you get the message across to the number of groups and individuals you have across the company?
Well, our goal is for every single person at Google to be aware of accessibility. And it doesn't matter what function they're in. If they're an engineer, they need to be able to build products for accessibility. If they're a product manager, they need to design the product correctly in terms of feature set. They're a user experience designer, they need to be able to design for accessibility from the beginning so that things are built correctly. If somebody works in sales or business, they need to be able to talk with clients about accessibility and understand their needs so that that can be passed back to the product development teams, etc. And so we have quite a bit of awareness building within the company through the variety of mechanisms that we have, including internal newsletters and company-wide meetings and global events. We also specifically, in regards to being liaison with the product teams do have people that they have designated to be accessibility leads for the various functions within their teams. And we work very closely with them. We do a few different things. One is our team creates and delivers educational programs to train people in each of these functions. We also hold consulting sessions with product teams on a regular basis, and we're always here for advice. We've also written internal guidelines, both for design and for engineering and testing of our products, so that people who don't have as deep of an education in accessibility as some of us do are able to design correctly and implement correctly and verify that their implementations have been done correctly.
In order to make sure that something really works, it requires a lot of testing. Do you mostly use internal Google visually impaired employees to test for accessibility, or do you go to outside groups?
So we do a number of forms of testing. I think it's really important to get a broad set of people to test the products. People who work at Google, whether they are visually impaired or not, are not necessarily representative of the population at large. And so we do internal testing. In fact, we have quite a few visually impaired Googlers. That's what we call ourselves, by the way, Googlers, who do try out our products and give a lot of very useful feedback. But we also run user studies all over the world. We have major engineering centers in many different cities. And we hold user studies with users, with visually impaired users, with users with other disabilities, and get their perspectives on what is working well in our product, what could work better, and ideas that they have. And we try to observe people actually using our product, so not just obtaining their opinions, which is one really important form of information, but also noting where people get stuck or confused or where things are not intuitive as designed. because as engineers and designers, we have certain conceptions of how people's mental models of our software are going to be, and they're not always accurate. And so nothing beats working with real users out there to really understand how well our products work for them.
And we had a very similar testing process to you because, of course, we were in corporate research and everybody in corporate research fancied him or herself to be somewhat of an expert in printing technologies and image quality. And so we'd test with ourselves, but if we wanted to get closer to a general population, we'd bring in the administrative assistants. And then after that, we'd go out, you know, and do focus groups and market research with real end customers. So,
yeah,
you know, you need to kind of get people with various approaches, opinions.
Exactly.
I know I've had difficulty using some of the Google applications and websites in the past. And I know many people have kind of, you know, said, boy, what's Google doing in terms of accessibility? I can't use these products. But I think in the last year or two on that time period, you've made some great strides and been very receptive to sort of your customer feedback in terms of making things accessible. And I'm thinking particularly of some of your enterprise products like Google Docs and the various applications in there. Can you talk a little bit about how you've addressed some of these issues?
Yes. First of all, I'm really, really glad to hear that you have had an improved experience using Google Docs, because that's a product we put a ton of effort into. And the entire suite of productivity applications, such as documents, spreadsheets, and presentations, and Drive, which is the file sharing system that we have gone through major revisions over the past year. And while doing that, we made major accessibility improvements. And one of the reasons that we focus so heavily on improving that set of products is just its importance to people. A lot of educational institutions are adopting Docs and Drive for their students, for homework assignments, for collaboration, and a lot of workplaces as well. And we really want to make sure that people are able to get a quality education and that no student feels like they can't collaborate with other students or use the resources that their teachers give them. And we don't want anybody who is working in a modern office where sharing documents is the norm to feel left behind either. And so we put a ton of focus into that. And my group, the Core Accessibility Engineering Group, has worked very closely with a large team of people who work on accessibility embedded within those products. In fact, I think almost everybody, which is a lot of people who work on those products, have received some form of accessibility education, and really they get credit for the amazing strides that they've made. And I've seen a lot of improvement also over the past year and several months in many of our other products as well. We're getting some good customer feedback, which really makes me happy. And I feel like the momentum is really growing, that so many people around the company are just excited about accessibility and are coming to us with questions. And I think even better, people from one product team are helping people from another product team and sometimes bypassing us, which just means that the whole movement has grown within the company. And I've witnessed a lot of great changes, and I expect so many more to continue to happen.
Well, it must be difficult when you're on the leading edge of technology development and you're developing these new techniques and ways of doing things. It must be difficult to make it accessible when you first put it out. I mean, for example, screen readers, if they have to deal with these new technologies, they don't know what's coming down the pipe usually ahead of time. And so what do they do? So what are some of the challenges involved in making these products accessible?
You're exactly right. We push the boundaries quite often on what HTML and JavaScript and other web technologies can do. We also push the boundaries on what mobile technologies can do. And I see that many times software engineers are using custom Android actions, for example, as opposed to built-in ones, because they really want to have rich interactive functionality. And screen readers are not built for that, or they haven't been historically. And especially when we're doing things that probably screen reader developers didn't anticipate the web was going to turn into, it is hard for our products to work with screen readers. And it takes conscious effort on the part of software engineers to put everything into place that needs to be there, tags, for example, and that need to be there for our products to work properly. It is possible. And one thing that I stress to engineers is you do not have to sacrifice an interesting, innovative design in order to make something accessible. You just have to know that if you're not using HTML and Android and iOS components out of the box, you are going to have some extra work to do in order to make it accessible. And as long as they know that and they budget the time into their planning processes to do that, they are able to serve all users of their products.
Well, I think sometimes, well, often, it's a lot easier to build in accessibility from the ground up when you're first making these applications, but to patch it in later on is a lot more difficult. So if you're conscious of it in the beginning phases, you have a lot better chance of being successful.
You're absolutely right, and that's a message that we try to get across to developers. Of course, some of our products are already created, and so we are going back and we are patching it on, but you're right, that's so much more work to do, and it's so much better to think about accessibility from the beginning, think about interaction flows, think about how different people with different modalities of accessing the information are going to use your application. In fact, a standard design paradigm, which so few people in the industry as a whole use, is that the logic of an application should not be tied to its layout. These should be separate layers, and there should be multiple ways of getting at the logic of the application. And if all software engineers actually employed this methodology, then making accessible applications would be so much easier.
So you mentioned making Google products for mobile devices, and we're all familiar with the Android cell phones. These are made by lots of different companies in lots of different flavors. Does this present special challenges to making even the Google products accessible on them?
I think the Android ecosystem, because it is vast, it means that a lot of testing needs to be done and that things don't work precisely the same on each device. Now, we do have standards, though, for the partners that we work with. And because of those standards, it does reduce some of the complexity. But as you may know, the Android operating system, it's open source. And any manufacturer who has never even spoken to Google can go and implement a device with the Android operating system. And so for those ones where there's no partnership between Google and the manufacturer, it's not something that we have control over. But we do want to have a healthy ecosystem. And most of the devices, at least in this country that you'll find, do follow better accessibility standards.
So do you make a point to reach out to other developers and manufacturers, makers of screen readers, and are you receptive to them reaching out as these new technologies are being developed so they can incorporate these new concepts into their end of the product development cycle?
We do developer outreach. There is an annual conference that Google puts on called I/O, and it's targeted to developers, and we have regularly given various talks on web and Android accessibility at these conferences. We actually, in the last I/O, published our material design guidelines. That's the name of the guidelines which we expect external developers or encourage them to adopt when designing programs for our platforms. And we've included accessibility guidelines along with the other design guidelines into that. So we're trying to get developers and designers on board with accessibility standards. We really want a healthy ecosystem. We don't see accessibility as something where we need to be competitive. We really want to be cooperative And if outreach that we do can help somebody who develops a competing application to our standard applications do accessibility even better, then we're really happy about that.
You know, it's interesting. I've often experienced that products that are more accessible to the visually impaired are often easier to use by the sighted community also. So there seems to be some, you know, important leverage that developers can use to, you know, leverage their accessibility work into satisfying a wider community.
Exactly. Accessibility is about usability. And even thinking about accessibility leads you to think about how users use your application. And designing for people with a variety of abilities, for example, designing for people with low vision who need high contrast, that helps all users across the board. But that's just one specific technique. The more general principle is when you think about accessibility, you're thinking about different ways in which people can use your product, which is going to help you make better design decisions overall.
Well, that's an interesting point. I've noticed that more and more people are talking less about accessibility and more in terms of usability. Sometimes just because an application is accessible doesn't mean it's actually usable and can be used as an efficient tool to accomplish one's task.
Yeah, that's a really good observation. It's really important to, A, enable tasks to be completed, and that's, I think, what you're calling accessibility, but you shouldn't stop there. It's also really important to make people enjoy using your products. And to do so, it really helps to do testing with real end users so that you can tell if a feature delights them or if it annoys the heck out of them.
That's the word we used at Xerox when developing products. Focus on customer delight.
Ah, good, perfect.
Now for this week's final item, what to expect in the future and how to stay informed about Google's accessibility efforts.
So what does the future hold for accessibility at Google? What should people be looking for?
So first of all, I can't tell you about everything that we're working on because we have some unreleased things. But I think what's interesting is that we're not just trying to take existing products and make them accessible. We are trying to do that, but we're also thinking about innovating. And that's what a lot of my team in the core accessibility engineering group is working on. And one smaller application that we have demoed publicly is something that sits on Google Glass. Now, Google Glass is a technology that you may have heard of, though most people out there haven't used it yet. It is basically a computer that sits on the face like glasses would, and it has a front-facing camera and has various sensors in it, and it has really interesting implications for accessibility as an assistive technology. But one thing that I can talk about, because we've demoed it publicly, is an OCR application that we wrote. And it was just a prototype. Glass is a platform that outside developers are able to develop on, and so we want it to inspire external developers to do similar things. OCR is optical character recognition, and what it means is that if you point a camera on something and run an OCR algorithm, then it can read it out loud. And so a possible use case of this is you're standing at a street and you want to read the street sign. Then you can use this application on Glass to do that. So that's just one little example. That's not a huge application, but it is one that I can talk about.
We actually did an entire episode of Eyes on Success in January of 2014, where we spoke with Sean Kane and Sina Baram about what kind of uses Google Glass has specifically for people with visual impairments.
Oh, cool.
That was really interesting to hear what they had to say.
Great.
And what was really interesting was you wouldn't think at first that a visually impaired person would want something like Google Glass with this display and all, but in terms of the other features, the camera and the instant feedback, there are some interesting applications.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you point us to some of your accessibility resources on the Google website where people can learn more about what's new in accessibility at Google and how to make some of these tools accessible in their work environment?
Absolutely. People can go to www.google.com/accessibility. And we have actually just relaunched that site. We've had it for a long time, but we've put so much more great new content on there. So we have a lot of demonstrations and tutorials and documentation and just information about using the accessibility features of our products. I hope people will find really useful, but if there is information missing, there's also a way to contact us so that we can get your feedback.
And what is that way to contact you?
It's there on that site.
And I assume there are a bunch of user forums specifically geared towards accessibility that people can join?
Yes, we also have two Google groups. These are community-run Google groups. So groups are just discussion forums or mailing lists where people can share their own information and experiences and advice. And so two of them, one is called Accessible, and the other one is called Eyes Free. It's Eyes-Free. And the easiest way is to just do a search on Google. And if you search for Accessible Google Group, it'll probably be the first result.
We are very familiar with Google Groups. We actually have two for our listeners. And the first one is Eyes on Success. That's announcements only. Every week we send out an announcement of that week's episode of Eyes on Success, and a couple times a year, maybe something else of general interest. And then the other one is EOS_discuss. And then anybody who's a member of that group can participate in conversations often sparked by an episode of Eyes on Success. And they've been very popular.
Great.
And that's how I find most information, is just go and Google it. As I tell people on the show all the time, let Google be your friend.
Exactly. I don't remember any URLs. I just remember the search terms.
And in case you didn't catch all of that, we'll have links to the various resources that Eve talked about that you can find about Google accessibility and their various forums. And we'll also have links to the Eyes on Success listener forums, both the Announce Forum and the Discuss Forum.
That's it for show number 1451. Next week on Eyes on Success, we will have our annual year-end special. This time, we'll demonstrate how to use the search tool on our website and discuss some of the categories of topics we've covered this year, as well as including some highlights. Topics have ranged from accessible reading tools and formats to interesting career options to extreme sports and more. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.